morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Weekend Update. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Welcome to the program, my friends, and thank you for joining me. Cowboy State Politics is Wyoming's most listened to podcast. Thanks to you, Cowboy State Politics is closing in on 250,000 downloads. I have to tell you, my friends, that is a ridiculously high number. I never would have guessed that this program could have even approached that number. So thank you very much for listening. On today's program, I have a conversation with Representative Daniel Singh. He represents House District 61 in Cheyenne. It's an interesting discussion. As he is on the Blockchain Committee, I wanted to talk to him about so-called AI. The reason I say it's so-called AI is it's not intelligence as we understand the word. So far as we know, AI, as it's called, does not, and thank God it doesn't, have self-awareness. However, current iterations of the technology have the possibility of doing some really dangerous things. We also talked about his recent support for a POT initiative in the city of Cheyenne and his support for Convention of States, both of which I am adamantly opposed to. So it is an interesting conversation, and we'll get to it in just a second. But first, I'd like to talk about what has turned into a fairly controversial vote by Representative Harriet Hageman. Earlier this week, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on a resolution of censure against Representative Rashida Tlaib. Tlaib is a member of the radical Israel-hating group known as the Squad. She, along with her pals Ilhan Omar and AOC, have been saying some really nasty stuff about Israel. They've been pushing Hamas propaganda and flashing Palestinian flags everywhere they can possibly think of. Quite frankly, I think that Rashida Tlaib is a despicable human being. Right after the October 7th slaughter of 1,400 people in Israel by Hamas, Rashida Tlaib said this.
Fox Business's Hillary Vaughn confronted Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib yesterday about Hamas's brutality and her support for the Palestinians. Watch.
Terrorists have cut off babies' heads and burned children alive. Do you support Israel's rights to defend themselves against this brutality?
We're just going to go through there.
You can't comment about Hamas terrorists chopping off babies' heads? Do you condone what Hamas has done, chopping off babies' heads, burning children alive, raping women in the street?
Silence. She would not answer.
Not so talkative. It's interesting that she didn't have anything to say about Hamas's attack on Israel. But several days later, when there was an alleged bombing at a hospital, Rashida Tlaib said this.
People think it's okay to bomb a hospital, watching those videos, and the people telling the kids don't cry, and like, let them cry.
Israel didn't hit a hospital. Hamas did. And for 3 weeks, Rashida Tlaib has yet to walk back her comments accusing the Israeli Defense Forces of murdering all of those people. Rashida Tlaib has been spewing Hamas propaganda since October 7th. She's displayed a Palestinian flag in the United States Capitol building, and generally speaking, is just a huge anti-Semite. Like I said, she's despicable. Well, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced a resolution of censure against Rashida Tlaib, and Congresswoman Hageman voted against it, and rightfully so. Shortly after the vote, Harriet Hageman put out a statement. Here's what she said. Quote, "As abhorrent and anti-Semitic as Representative Tlaib's comments were, she has a right to make them. I don't agree with her on much of anything, and certainly not on anything this censure was addressing. But the First Amendment would not be necessary if it existed only to protect agreeable speech. I am a First Amendment absolutist. I read the words, "Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech," and I take them to heart. The answer to despicable speech is more and better reasoned speech, not the suppression of anyone's voice. At this moment in time, it is critically important that we expose the beliefs of people like Representative Tlaib. Stopping her from speaking does not change hearts and minds. It only drives those insidious ideas underground where they are more difficult to battle against. This censure was poorly written. It included a misquote of Representative Tlaib's comments and referred to her as inciting an insurrection on October 18th. I'm very concerned by that, including this language. We would actually be giving our opponents the weapons with which to continue to attack President Trump on about the January 6th defendants. In short, the despicable display that happened in the Cannon office building on October 18th, and that was a giant protest that was done inside the office building, wasn't an insurrection. But by claiming that it was, the resolution to censure Representative Tlaib would have created serious consequences on other fronts and implied that what had happened on January 6th was also an insurrection. I was not alone in this conclusion, as 22 other Republicans, including conservatives such as Chip Roy and Thomas Massie, concurred. I serve on the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, where we have uncovered clear evidence of our federal government censoring and taking action against American citizens in response to lawfully held beliefs. Censuring Representative Tlaib or any other member with whom I disagree would be equal to the tyrants infringing upon constitutionally protected rights within our own federal agencies. Disagreeable speech is not the same as unlawful speech. End quote. Representative Hageman is absolutely right. Though I disagree with everything you say, I will defend to the death your right to say it. When you really look at the First Amendment, the only right you actually do have is to be offended. If we don't have that right, then the First Amendment is meaningless. And Harriet Hageman made the right vote in voting against that censure. Coming up next is my discussion with Representative Daniel Singh. But first, an absolutely egregious moment of self-aggrandizement. This installment of Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you're in the market for any type of metal structure, whether it's a barn or a garage or a roping arena or maybe a big gigantic warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. So it doesn't matter what type of building you've been thinking about for your property, give Nick and Jesse a call. Their phone number is 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. My friends, it's Saturday, and you know what that means, don't you? Hot wings from the Wing It Food Truck. They make the most incredible wings in the state of Wyoming. And it's not just hot wings. They have several other different flavors. I personally recommend the sweet habanero wings. They're absolutely out of this world, my friends. Now, the way that you can figure out where that truck is going to be is go to their Facebook page, The Wing It Food Truck, and you'll find their weekly schedule. That way, you can plan your entire week around where that truck is going to be. If you haven't noticed, it's been getting a little nippy in the morning. And if you are in the unfortunate circumstance of having to go shovel the walk in the morning, you definitely need something to keep those ears of yours nice and toasty warm. New Trend Hats is a Wyoming-based company, and they have a gigantic selection of hats for both men and women. So go to their website, newtrendhats.com, and you'll be sure to find something to keep those ears of yours nice and toasty warm. That's New Trend Hats. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, really, any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There, you can find all of the shows, as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Rashida Tlaib, and you don't quite understand what reality is, well, I suggest you go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, listen to a program, and educate yourself. That way, you can figure out how you should just retire from Congress and never speak to any of us again. You can catch my live program every weekday from 9 a.m. to 11 on the Independence Network. I cover mostly national issues during the two-hour live program. But if you want to find out what's going on in the world during the week, tune in to Cowboy State Politics Live. It's 9 to 11 a.m. every weekday on the Independence Network. To listen, go to the website, independencenetwork.us. And now, back to the program. Welcome back to the program. David Iverson, Wyoming's conservative voice, documented to be almost always right over 98% of the time. Earlier this week, I had a chance to visit with Representative Daniel Singh from House District 61. We talked about everything AI that's going on in the blockchain committee, and we also talked about his support of POT and the Convention of States. Here's our conversation. Joining me via Zoom is House District 61 Representative Daniel Singh. Daniel, welcome back to Cowboy State Politics.
Hey there, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a long time. I think it was the last time we spoke on the program was before the primary election. So welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So you're on a couple different committees, like all of the conservative legislators. You didn't get very many committees. One of them that you're on is the Select Committee on Blockchain, Financial Technology, and Digital Innovation Technology. There's been a lot in the news lately about AI and blockchain and the stable token. So I was wondering, just from the beginning, if you could just give my listeners kind of a quick rundown of what you guys have been doing during the interim.
Sure. Well, David, I think this is probably the most fascinating committee I could have been put on. And I'm thankful that I'm on this committee. We work on a plethora of different topics, talking about the blockchain. We're working with AI and any sort of technological base, anything that has to do with a computer, really, in the state is fair game for this committee. And, well, we're going over a lot of different things. Some of the different ideas that we're talking about are changing the way that your assets are classified. If they're an NFT on the internet, for example, how would that be transferred after you die?
Hold on just a second. So sure. A lot of people may not be familiar with NFTs. Could you just quickly explain what that is?
Sure. An NFT stands for non-fungible token. It means it can't be replaced for a different good or service. And so this is any sort of digital media that it's arbitrarily priced, right? So in the height of the NFT market, there were people creating digital pictures of things like gorillas or little cartoons, and they were trading them almost like you would trade baseball cards or Pokemon cards. And as different people would trade them, they would gain value. And as different people would make them, those would be more valuable than other things. But that's all. So it's non-fungible. It's the only one that exists, and it exists on a blockchain, which it means that it's verified. There's only, if anyone tries to remove this token from the system, everyone would be immediately able to see it, and it wouldn't be able to be removed.
Fascinating. It wasn't until a few years ago that these things actually came into existence. But you know, they're totally a thing. People create digital art all the time. And, you know, what I do, it's audio that's stored in a digital form. So, I mean, it totally fits within that realm, though not quite the same thing. You're also working on a bill to ban artificial intelligence impersonation.
That's right. So that's unlawful synthetic media.
What's the bill entail? I mean, what's the idea behind it?
I'm just going to read off the act. It says an act relating to crimes and offenses creating the offense of unlawful distribution of misleading synthetic media, providing for penalties and providing for an effective date. So this would be if you've heard about deepfakes.
Of course.
So a deepfake is an artificially created piece of art or media or what have you, which is it's been generated by an algorithm and it can impersonate anybody. So what we're trying to do is create some sort of responsibility, acknowledgement of wrongdoing. If someone were to create a deepfake of someone and put that out there as truth.
Well, let's just kind of clear this up real quick for our listeners. Imagine, sure. And this is the way that I explained it on my program, and I think that the analogy is apt. Let's just assume if there's a divorce proceeding going on, and one of the participants in the, I guess, I don't know if you're a participant in a divorce, but one of the parties in a divorce has a video created of the other party doing something salacious. That video, though it's entirely fake, gets put out online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but with some of these deep fakes, there's no way to tell if it's been artificially generated or if it's a legitimate video. Is that right?
The only way you would be able to tell if it's not apparent by the naked eye, you would have to use a totally different language model to identify something as generated by AI.
To me, it's absolutely terrifying. I mean, we're in a situation globally right now with what's going on in the Middle East. Imagine if, and I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but imagine if somebody created a deep fake of one of these world leaders saying, push the red button or something. I mean, this is extraordinarily dangerous, if you ask me.
Oh, it's not only dangerous, it's already happening. In the most recent Turkish election, the person who was challenging their current leader over there, right before election day, there was a deep fake video of this candidate in support of radical Islamic fighters. And it was a video of him alongside these fighters. And enough people saw it. It was taken down. It was, you know, people were told later that it wasn't real, but it happened at just enough time for the election to be impacted by a deepfake.
Wow. I didn't even hear about that one. And I'm usually pretty up on all this stuff.
Yeah, it's wild. When we're working here on the ethics of technology and AI, we're working with standards that we have in Western society, but other countries are not playing by the same rules. For example, China, their AI apparatus will not be held to the same ethical standards as they are in the West.
Well, I don't think that anything in China is held to the same ethical standards as over here. But, you know, I've watched some of these deep fakes, and it's, man, if you didn't know that it was fake, you'd have to do some serious research to determine its validity. I mean, like I say, to me, it's absolutely terrifying. How exactly is the bill going to work? Because you'd have to find out that whatever digital medium came out that somebody was saying was, you know, not legitimate. How would you write that into law to determine what's legitimate and what's not?
Well, so there are a couple of qualifications here in the bill. So if it wasn't with the consent of the natural person that it's representing, that would be a flag right there. If it's not constantly displaying an obvious notice within the media identifying itself as synthetic media, that was a big deal. So if, for example, one of the shows that I'll watch to get a fresh political perspective would be South Park. And South Park at the beginning of each episode, they very clearly display that this is not intended to be serious. These are not real characters, and this is all fictional. So some sort of disclosure on any sort of synthetically developed media can be programmed in. So I hear a lot of complaints about AI. Not one of the ethical problems with AI is that it takes the work of other people, other artists, and it conglomerates it and creates something new without giving credit to those artists. So one thing that we could ask language model developers is to ensure that there's a watermark that shows that this is artificial.
When the chat AI or the chatbot big one just came out, when it came out, I was just playing around with it, and I asked it to write a review of cowboy state politics. And I'm telling you what, Daniel, this was the most glowing review that I've ever received. And the scary thing about it is the writing was actually pretty good. The grammar was correct. I took it around to a couple different people and said, hey, look what was written about me. And they read it, and they're like, wow, that's fantastic. I'm like, yeah, it would be, except that it's totally fake, and it was written by a chatbot. You know, so I think that it's we absolutely have to enact some sort of legislation. Part of the writer's strike, AI was definitely part of that strike. All right, so let's talk about your other committee, Travel, Recreation, and Cultural Resources. What do you got going on there?
Oh, shoot. Let me pull that up. We're doing a lot. Most recently, I voted against a bill which would have raised the cost of out-of-state fishing licenses. I understand that is a hot and contentious issue, and I voted against raising those costs.
Well, good job on that one. I mean, the cost of licenses have been going up continually the last several years, and good job in voting that way. License fees have been continually going up for the last several years. And, you know, it almost seems like some people down in Cheyenne, they don't understand that a lot of Wyoming communities exist simply because of hunting, fishing, and recreation. And some of these licenses are getting so expensive that a lot of people that used to come year over year just can't afford it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of the decision was, and I'll hear in any of these decisions, I'll hear all the arguments. I'll try my best to hear all the arguments. And one thing that I had a problem with was this would have raised our fishing licenses to more than what the surrounding states would have charged for the different packages that they had. And I just don't think that would have been the right move. And so I voted against it.
There's been a lot of measures lately that they start out saying, well, you know, it's only non-residents that'll pay this fee. And when the final results are done, turns out that a whole bunch of Wyoming citizens are paying the fee too. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case with non-resident hunting and fishing licenses, but certainly was the case with the lodging tax. So, but you know, there again, I'm one of those that says, if you're trying to raise money, first, you got to tell us what you're raising it for. And secondly, what about all this money that you've already taken from Wyoming citizens anyway? You know, why aren't we using that? And so let's talk about that for just a second. A lot of conservatives, sure, or most of the conservatives, took a lot of heat surrounding the budget and voting against it. In fact, Albert Summers just put out an op-ed in the Pinedale Roundup when he was talking about it. So, first question, where were you at with the budget? Did you vote for it? Did you vote against it? And whatever your answer is, why did you make that decision?
Well, I haven't voted for the budget yet. I voted against the supplemental
budget. Yeah, the supplemental budget is what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think that's an important distinction to make, because this is a supplemental budget. The last go around, the budget was established, and we plan for the upcoming 2 years, and we work with the plan. So philosophically, just very from the 10,000 foot view, philosophically, I'm just opposed to a supplemental budget. when we could have hashed, it could have been hashed out in the previous session.
I think that that's pretty wise because, I mean, the Wyoming Constitution is very clear. The reason why we have a budget session, which is the one that we're getting ready to go into, is to write the budget, and it's supposed to be for 2 years. And it just seems like now we have a budget every single year simply because revenues have increased. And so, you know, the governor wants to spend a whole bunch of money. And I don't think that that's what was intended by the Constitution at all.
Right. If we needed to, if there is really a need for that much more money, then that should have been budgeted into the previous session as cushion money. So I know we will need to, what I'm about to say may horrify your listeners, but sometimes the government will need to do things to spend money. There is a cost to justice, and we will need to fund the operations of the government. We'll need to do so responsibly and selectively, and every idea that comes before us, we can't say yes to, because we're responsible for the people's money. And wow, it's a heavy responsibility, and I do not want to be frivolous with the people's money. That's very important to me. So we have our essential functions, and that's also why I didn't vote for the shooting complex, for example. Although I love guns, I love shooting guns. I believe in the Second Amendment. But I don't necessarily agree that it's the government's role to create a shooting complex and fight for that. And I did not win in that particular vote, and that's okay. And that's why we meet as a legislative body. But the government should only be doing the things that are essential for a government to do.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, with the shooting complex, that one's kind of a tricky one. Because on the one hand, I don't want the government anywhere near my guns. I don't want them in control of a shooting complex. I don't want them having anything to do with firearms. They do enough as it is. And certainly spending $10 million on a shooting sports complex definitely would get the government involved. As you know, I'm good friends with Representative Pendergraft, and his big complaint with it right now is that there's no desire on the part of the legislature to have a third party take over the running of this complex once it's built, private entity. That's where he's at on it. I'm kind of on the fence with it, and I'll tell you why. First, I already mentioned that I'm totally against the government being involved in guns, so that's the negative side. But on the other hand... You know, I mentioned the lodging tax that the legislature passed not that long ago, and they were supposed to collect something like $10 or $12 million, and that was supposed to be the end of the lodging tax. Well, the truth is, they collected $40 million, and so part of the money that's going towards the shooting complex is taken from the lodging tax. So, in my mind, first of all, they're not going to give that money back to people. Why shouldn't we use it in such a way that's going to benefit Wyoming citizens? So on that one, I'm kind of on the fence, but I lean towards your side on it, saying that I really don't think that that's an essential function of government.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, we had the debate, and respectfully, the legislature decided something else. And, you know, you go on from there.
So let me ask you about something. I've been meaning to ask you this for quite some time. There was a measure in the city of Cheyenne concerning marijuana, and you came out, and I think you actually spoke at the meeting in favor of that measure. So two things. First, could you tell me what was going on with the ordinance or the bill that the city of Cheyenne was considering? And then second, could you tell me what side you were on?
Sure. So this was this would have made the city of Cheyenne, in the municipality of Cheyenne itself, it would have made marijuana decriminalized. And I spoke in favor of this initiative because I believe that the government should be small. And I think that's an infringement of your individual liberties for the government to imprison you over a personal health decision like that. And I know that's a loaded statement, and I'm happy to elaborate. But that's where I came out and spoke at the city council in favor of that argument. The city council voted against it, and I respect that. And honestly, it was probably for the best that they voted against that, because it would have deferred all of the punishments to the county, and the county punishments would have been worse. So
I guess my main problem with that is you could make the same argument about a number of different things, though it's absolutely absurd. But I could make an argument that heroin is a health care decision, and I don't have a right to be able to use heroin. I guess what I'm saying is, if marijuana is a medical treatment, and that's a big if in my mind,
right,
you also have to contend with the idea that it's also a hallucinogen. So how does the city have authority to regulate hallucinogens and things that are classified as illegal drugs?
Mm-hmm. Well, Representative Hornock was also there that night, and he pointed out that if the city were to try to change any of their policy towards the drugs that have already been scheduled in our state statutes, then that would effectively create a special class of citizen that only exists in Cheyenne. And so if there were, and this is not what Ben said, but if there were some sort of statewide initiative, it would have to be done through the state statutes that were changed.
When that whole thing was going on, I was just looking at it saying, how can the city of Cheyenne think that they can just write an ordinance that goes against state statute? I mean, if that thing went through, you'd have cities and towns writing all sorts of crazy laws.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know the words local control are thrown around a lot, and I don't think that's what local control
means. I don't think that's what it means, man. All right. Last question for you, Daniel. The Convention of States is a bill that seems to come up every single session. You manage that bill on the floor. By the way, I think you did a pretty good job in managing it. Is that a piece of legislation that's going to hit this legislative session? And if so, are you going to be a sponsor of it?
I am not sure if it will hit this budget session. I am not abandoning the cause. I still believe in the Convention of States, just like our newly elected Speaker of the House believes in the Convention of States. However,
I don't think that's a credit to your argument, by the way.
I threw it out there. I like that. During the summer, I attended a simulated Article 5 Convention of States in Williamsburg, Virginia. And I got to talk to conservatives from all across the country. There were representatives and senators from every state except for Rhode Island. And we held the process. We voted for amendments to the Constitution. It took 3 days. And though it was very eye-opening, I think federal government never ceases to amaze me.
That's the biggest issue there, is Wyoming, and this is a law that's not specific to Wyoming, but we have a law that says, I believe it's House Bill 50. I think it was from 2017. But in any case, the law specifically says that the people who would attend this convention would be members of the legislature. And with the legislature that we have right now, it's not going to be people like Mark Jennings, yourself, John Baer, Chip Nyman. No, it's going to be people like Speaker of the House Albert Summers and Ogden Driscoll and people who are just fundamentally progressive. And in my mind, there's so many arguments surrounding the Convention of States that, and like you said, considering what's happening in Washington or what happened in Washington, D.C., I don't think we're anywhere close to a place where we can even attempt that.
I hear you. My question would then be, at what cost, at what dollar amount would it take for us to consider something? For someone who is against the idea, how much debt would it take to consider a convention of states to get it even in a conversation? Would it take $500 trillion worth of debt?
But see, that's one of the the fallacies, though, because there's only one type of country that has a balanced budget. Do you know what type of country that is?
What kind of country is it?
It's a socialist one, because if you if you pass any sort of balanced budget amendment, literally what you're giving the government is a license to steal. Because they're not going to stop spending. So what will happen is, well, you know, we have this project over here that we have to fund. You know, there's this war over in, you know, some other country halfway around
some
the world.
Some distant corner in a world that nobody knows.
Right. And what will happen is they'll say, well, we just have to raise taxes. Margaret Thatcher said it best. Socialism works until you run out of other people's money to spend. And the history of socialists, and let's be honest, we've got a lot of those in our government. And frankly, we've got a lot of Marxists in Wyoming, too. That's totally within their line of thinking. So the long and the short of it is, even if it were workable, which I don't think that it is, I don't think we're anywhere close to a place where we can even attempt that. We don't have people like George Washington and Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and all of those guys. I don't know where those people are, our versions of those are today. And I really think that you're going to need people of that character in order for the Convention of States to have any prayer of working. So, you know, I think it's a fascinating idea. It's just you and I are definitely on opposite sides of that one.
Well, I can say that I agree that Marxism and socialism are bad.
Oh, yeah.
I don't agree with those things. I, in fact, would embrace more of an era of voluntarism with our government. And that's that. I'm going to circle back to my thoughts on marijuana. I recognize very clearly that I believe a majority of folks in Wyoming do not want legal recreational marijuana. I also have a problem calling marijuana medicine when the medical marijuana industry that exists right now is just selling stronger marijuana.
Yeah, it's terrible.
However, however, at the same time, I don't think it's justified to be putting people into jail over using something like that. I know that something that's very important to you is freedom of religion. And there are I'm impressed by the Mormons that live in Wyoming, because they're able to cope with all of us drinking coffee and not worrying about how it violates their own ethical code. And if a marijuana conversation comes up in the legislature, it will revolve around Article 7, Section 20 of the Constitution, which it refers to morality. And I would defer then to where our freedom of religion is found in the Wyoming Constitution. Let me just pull it up here. It's Article 1, Section 18. And it's a pretty long one, but it ends in but the liberty of conscience hereby secured shall not be so constructed as to excuse acts of licentiousness or to justify practices inconsistent with the peace or safety of the state. I don't think that marijuana should be punished the same way that we're punishing things like heroin and fentanyl. There are people, there's a population in the world that considers marijuana to be a holy plant. In fact, there are more people on earth that consider marijuana a holy God-given plant than there are people that exist in the state of Wyoming. But to immediately consider it, to assume that people that would use marijuana are going to be criminals, we're considering them guilty. We're assuming they're...
I don't know about that, because you're still innocent until proven guilty. I don't think you're going to get the whole hallucinogen thing as a function of a religion past the Supreme Court. There was a case... This goes back to college, man. You're making me dig deep here. But there was a Supreme Court case where there was a bunch of prisoners in some prison somewhere, and they established what they called the Church of LSD.
Okay.
And it's totally fictitious church, not a religion. But anyway, it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that there can't be a church of LSD. That you could have, I suppose, that you could have some sort of religion that had, you know, perhaps one of their rites or ceremonies or something involve marijuana, but I don't know that religion exists. And so what the Supreme Court ruled was that it, in order for you to use the freedom of religion clause, it has to be, you know, a recognized religion. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know that I buy that argument simply because it's proven to be a hallucinogen. I've read lots of studies that say that it's absolutely bad for your health, that it's absolutely a gateway drug, and we could debate these at another time, but I think that the jury is totally out on whether there are beneficial effects to marijuana, and I think you mentioned one of the negatives to it, that Colorado is a perfect example, that they were going to tax marijuana, and they were going to control it, and it was not going to be this big thing, and they're going to make a whole bunch of money off of it. And really, what's happened is marijuana dealers have just created more and more potent versions of their product to get around laws. And so anytime I think when you start messing around with a hallucinogenic drug, which it absolutely is, there's all sorts of these roadblocks that happen. And not to mention that it's illegal for a lot of reasons, one of which I've already mentioned a couple times. The secondary problem with it is, how do you monitor marijuana? Think about a police officer. We have the technology to determine if somebody is driving under the influence of alcohol. We've got the breathalyzer test. How do you determine if somebody's driving while high? Except, of course, that they're probably going like 15 miles an hour and they're paranoid that somebody's following them. But how do you determine that somebody's under the influence of that? We just don't have the technology yet to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess my question to you would be, sure, there. Using drugs is bad. Okay, don't use drugs. But does that justify, if someone is using this, if they're using marijuana on their own property, they're not bothering anyone, does that justify a felony if they have enough of it as a crime against the state?
I think the answer to that question is pretty simple. First, that it's absolutely a fallacy that any type of intoxicant can be kept out of the hands of other people. You can outlaw a whole bunch of stuff. In fact, there's all sorts of drugs that are outlawed, and yet they still make their way into high schools and middle schools. How is that? Well, you either A, get it from a dealer on the street, or...
And that's the policy on the books right now.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm saying is, it still gets into the school. And so my argument would be that there is not a case where that intoxicant, marijuana, can be kept strictly on somebody's property where somebody is not bothering anybody else, where it's not affecting anybody else. That's just not going to happen. And I'm one of those John Stuart Mill fans that the only acceptable use of government force is that which prevents harm to another person. I don't think that there's a way, because we have evidence to the contrary right now, that you can keep any of these substances out of the hands of young people or anybody else for that matter. And that's one of the big reasons why we have all of these things outlawed. By the way, I happen to think that alcohol is just as destructive as a lot of these things. At least it was in my life. It nearly killed me. Actually, it did, and I had some really good doctors. But I don't buy any of the arguments that this can be regulated, that we can do it safely, that there's a guy, that there's some pothead somewhere. We shouldn't outlaw it because he can keep it to himself. We have lots of evidence every single day in just about every single school in America where we can't even keep it out of schools while it's being outlawed. So that would be my response to that. Well, Daniel, I appreciate you taking the time and taking a little abuse from me. As you know, you're welcome back on the program anytime you like. I'm sure we'll talk again as we get closer to the sessions. Going to be a lot of stuff going on. So if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Well, you can always check out my Facebook, just Representative Daniel Singh. You can send me an email at daniel.singh@wildedge.gov. or you can text or call me. My phone number is 307-274-3909.
Well, I appreciate it, Representative. And like I said, you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it. And I always know I'm going to get a good conversation with you. So
thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
You too.
That'll do it for today's installment of Weekend Update. Have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday when I get back from the Wyoming GOP State Central Committee. I assume we'll have plenty to talk about upon my return. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.